Hey guys, and welcome to the Pace Racing Podcast, the Canadian triathlon podcast made mind for the age group triathletes. Now, I'm excited to say that today's guest is a jack of many trades, including being an elite triathlete, an ITU photographer and content creator, and has even been featured on the TV show Tiny House Nations, and that is Tommy Zafirez. So most may already know that Tom is married to Katie Zafirez, who's already been a previous podcast guest on the Pace Racing Podcast. But I thought it'd be cool today to talk to Tom about the Super League from a slightly different angle than most, and that is through the lens of his camera. So Tom plays an integral part in filming and photography at the ITU races and Super League races and sees these events from a much different angle than we do. Now, he connects with all the triathletes on a personal level. He's great friends with all of them, and he's there through all the traveling, the downtime, the race preparations, and even snapping pictures at the finish line and post-race celebrations. He's a big part of the Super League Triathlon, and I thought it'd be great to hear from him and his perspectives and see what he has to say about the inside scoop of triathlon, like what goes on behind the scenes that we don't often get to see and hear about. And of course, like all episodes, I'd like to dig in for some great training tips and key takeaways, and Tom definitely gave us some amazing answers, so I look forward to sharing all that with you guys in today's episode. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the episode, guys. Now let's cue the music. Today's show is brought to you by two sponsors. The first one is Brown Sports Bike Shop, located in Toronto, Ontario. So I've always wanted to partner up alongside a local bike shop, but I was reluctant to commit because I never found a bike shop that encompassed everything I wanted in a shop until I met JP from Brown Sports. When you want to help represent a bike shop, you want to know that you can be absolutely sure you can refer your friends and family and listeners to them and know they're being taken care of in the best hands and getting the best prices. The team at Brown Sports are super knowledgeable when it comes to proper bike selection and bike fitting. In fact, JP is a Retool and IBFI Level 2 certified fitter and will go above and beyond helping you select the right bike for you and go to great lengths in making sure you leave the best bike fit possible. And they have a huge selection of bikes, including an incredible lineup from Quintana Roo Bikes. And they're also the only company in Canada to offer up the 51 Speed Shop products. So it's really an all-in-one shop. So it's not just a bike shop, though. They also have a ton of great nutritional products, swim gear, and running gear. So if you're needing to add something to your triathlon repertoire, then there's a good chance they have it. And I'm currently working with JP now to get my bike fit dialed in, as last season I realized I was losing some valuable wattage and coming off the bike way more fatigued than I had to be because my positioning was way off. So I'll be doing a video of the fitting process when it's all done. So if you want to see that, then be sure to sign up to the Pacing Racing YouTube channel to be first notified when that comes out. And alongside carrying some of the best triathlon and road bike selections, Brown Sports also has a demo room for all the best indoor bike trainers, including the TAC series, the Wahoo series, and even the latest 4i Flight trainer. So if you're in the market for a new bike trainer, then they are also the experts in that area, and they'll help you set up the proper trainer and get you a good price. So if you want to go check them out in person, you can find them at 2447 Bloor Street West in Toronto at the Jane and Bloor intersection, or of course, you can also check them out and see their full inventory and list of services online at brownsports.com. And lastly, you can follow them on Instagram or Facebook by searching Brown Sports. The second sponsor of today's show is Echelon Wheels, which is a wheel manufacturer based right here out of Ontario, Canada. And I'm beyond happy to find a wheel company like Echelon for so many reasons. As we mentioned, this being a Canadian-based podcast, I love to have partnerships with other Canadian brands, and who better than a wheel company that offers top quality designs and materials for a wheel set at a fraction of the cost compared to the other brands in the market. And to put this into perspective, the Echelon full disc is going for around $1,499 Canadian, whereas some other brands in the market are selling their full discs for upwards of $3,300 US. And of course, every wheel set is different, but as an age grouper, we all know that the sport is super expensive. So it's nice knowing there are brands out there like Echelon that are just able to keep the cost down for us as much as possible. So the neat thing about Echelon is that they're active cyclists who run the company. So you know they're not just making their products, they're actually using them for their passion. And if you look at their products, they carry wheel selections from U-profile, V-profile, and offer depth ranges from 38 millimeters all the way up to the full disc. So if you're curious about my bike setup, I'm currently running with a 60 millimeter Echelon wheel in the front and an 88 millimeter Echelon wheel in the rear with DT Swiss hubs. And recently I created an aero testing video alongside William, the co-founder of Echelon Wheels, where we tested three different Echelon wheel sets across 2 days of outdoor testing at different set wattages to see what wheels are best suited in certain course conditions. So if you guys want to check that out, you can head to Pacing Racing on YouTube. Echelon isn't only a partner of the Pace Racing podcast, but they're also huge supporters of Team LPC, which is the team I'm training with this year as I build up to 2020 Challenge Roth. And for a limited time, they've been super, super awesome and offer up a discount code to the Pacing Racing listeners. So if you want to look at getting yourself a wheel set, then head to echelonwheels.ca and use promo code Pacing and Racing. And I also recommend checking them out on Instagram or Facebook by searching at Echelon Wheels. And again, Echelon is spelled E-C-H-E-L-O-N. So Tom, welcome to Pace Racing Podcast, man. How you doing?
Hey, really good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. No, thanks so much for coming on the show. Obviously, we're just saying there, you were a busy guy. So, I mean, we appreciate you coming on here to take the time to talk. But, I mean, it looks like you've been out having a good time these days, the last couple of days, surfing, whatnot, eh?
Yeah, that's what you got to do when you get back done with the season, the triathlon season. You try to do as much non-triathlon related things as you can. just try to feel normal again. And it's funny being back home and like hanging out with friends and you're talking to them about like their kids and like buying a new house. And you're just like, wow, all these normal people, like you feel like you're so behind the curve. But then of course on their side of things, they're like, oh my gosh, like all you're doing is traveling the world. Like you're doing what you love with the person you love. And like, oh, it's crazy. So it's a good combination coming back and not being part of triathlon, but also being able to talk about the experiences that you've had throughout the year.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, one of the cool things about being triathletes is, you know, those experiences you get to have, I mean, you know, typical people just don't get to do with all the traveling and whatnot, especially the ITU triathletes. So no, that's pretty cool, man. And I mean, happy it shows that, I mean, despite everything, trying to keep everything non-triathlon specific, that you came onto a triathlon specific podcast today to talk. So I'm happy you did that. So looking forward to it. But I mean, let's dive in here to your background and early triathlon career first. I mean, I always like to ask sort of what made you get into triathlon in the beginning and at what point did you sort of realize it was something you wanted to commit to and pursue and eventually become an elite triathlete?
Yeah, the short version is I was a swimmer for 16 years and then swam at the Olympic trials in 2008 and then never wanted to swim again. I was like, thank God I'm done. So basically started working. I was coaching swimming at the club level, collegiate level, and at high school. And then I was working at Safeway in the produce department. And basically, I wasn't really, the second I was done swimming, I'm like, I'm never doing it again. So I wasn't doing any activity. So I decided to buy a bike to just use as transportation. And at that point in life, the gas is really expensive where I live. So I'm like, oh, it's way better and cheaper to just ride a bike everywhere. And that week that I had bought a bike, there was a triathlon in my hometown. And I didn't know what triathlon was. But the race director like contacted me. It was like, hey, I'll give you a free entry. Would you want to do this? And I'm like, yeah, what is it? Like, and so basically my mom bought me a pair of running shoes the day before the race, cause I was just going to run in Vans, like skate shoes. Like,
awesome. Shoes.
And, she was like, oh, you're going to get injured. I'm like, I don't even know what injury is. Like, so, ended up doing that race and didn't think anything of it. Like just thought it was going to be a fun one-off thing. But then the next year did it again and then was contacted by Victor Plata, who is an Olympian from 2004 and he lives in Santa Cruz where I'm from. So he contacted me about coaching and originally I told him like, no, I'm done with like elite sport. I swam for so many years. I don't want to do that anymore. I just want to do it for fun. But then I ended up doing another triathlon and then I was like, you know what? I kind of want to do this. Like, let's see. So I contacted Victor. He became my coach. And then at my basically third race ever, fourth race maybe, I guess it was. I went to Claremont, Florida to an elite development race and got my elite card. And then just, yeah, went pro basically. So I was still coaching swimming, still working at Safeway, and then now training as an elite triathlete. And it wasn't until, and that was 2010. So then it wasn't until 2012 when I started going full time, like quitting all my other jobs just to focus on triathlon. And that was due to a number of factors, but one of them being Bevan Doherty, who's a two-time Olympic medalist in triathlon, moved to Santa Cruz and then contacted me about swimming together. So he basically mentored me. And then like when I split my relationship with Victor, when I ended up going to Europe and everything to start racing French Grand Prix and kind of accelerate my triathlon draft legal career, Bevan was the one who was like mentoring me. So there was a lot of different factors that my career in triathlon would never have happened if things didn't fall into place like that. So That's the short version of how I got into it and started going full time, basically in 2012. And then at that time as well, the end of 2012 is when I met Joel Filial, who became my coach, and when he was starting the JFT crew, which we didn't even have a name for at the time, and until like a year later when we came up with JFT crew. But that was also a really cool thing to be a part of that when it was first starting, like the very beginning of it. And then now having been a part of it the longest out of everyone, even though I'm not racing anymore, still a part of it quite heavily.
That's amazing, man. So it's so cool to hear how like all the stars basically come to alignment in order for all this to kind of pan out. It was really cool to see that because, yeah, like you said, like you never had the intentions of becoming a triathlete. But I'm curious, like, how did you find the running? Because obviously it sounds like you were really good right at the beginning, right? But of course, never coming from a running background, did your swim and bike fitness just carry over?
Well, I had never ridden a bike either. So it was mainly just swim fitness and then skateboarding. I think that's what helped me for running was a lot of skateboarding, even though obviously it's not the same, but there is a lot of running involved and like a lot of ankle stabilization and just different muscles that you use in skateboarding that probably helped. Mm-hmm. But I was getting injured quite often when I first started. Having waterlogged bones from 16 years of swimming did not help. And my cardiovascular system was much stronger than what my body was able to handle. So I was able to run faster and longer and feel fine. Like my heart rate would be totally fine. I would feel fine, but then my body, I wasn't able to recover and like back it up day after day. So I would have these workouts or these training blocks where I would feel amazing. And then all of a sudden it would just be one day where I'm like, oh man, like my ankles are destroyed or my shins are destroyed or my knees are destroyed. It was like working its way up from my toes, like all the way to my hips, but it was just my lower body. Like my upper body was fine, but it took like, 2.5, maybe 3 years to like finally work out all those kinks. And then, it honestly wasn't even until like training with Katie where my running actually got exponentially better because what I was able to do and how fast I was able to run wasn't good for the long term because I kept having those little niggles and having to take a few days off here or cut the mileage there or cut this there. But when I started training with Katie, I was doing everything at her pace. And so then I was just being consistent over weeks and weeks and weeks until now, like I could take a couple weeks off and then just do a super hard workout and not worry about being injured. So it was definitely a learning process, something that like, you wouldn't have been able to know at the time, but then now looking back, you're like, dang, I wish I had known, like, this is what would have helped me, you know? So it's just one of those things that hindsight's 20/20. You never know until you look back at it, but you just make the adaptations as you realize them along the way and do your best.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's amazing. And I know for most listeners know, of course, but you're married to Katie, who was also on our podcast. Now, how did you two meet? Was this, through triathlon?
Yep. Another stars aligning perfect situation where I had been injured. And so I changed my race schedule and ended up last minute changing and deciding to go to Tijavaris, Hungary to a World Cup there. And then that's where I ended up meeting Katie. So it was one of those things where she's from Maryland, which is all the way across the US from where I'm from, Santa Cruz, California. So we're like 5.5 hour flight away from each other. Mm-hmm. And like, if you have a different race schedule than somebody and you're not training together, like when we first met, she was living and training in Phoenix and I was in New Zealand. So like, if we hadn't have met at that one race, like who knows if we would have met again at some point, you know? And so it was just one of those things where like, thankfully I was injured and had to change my schedule and then we met and then now we're married. So I'm like looking back, I'm like, oh good. I'm glad that I was injured or whatever.
So. That's awesome. Well, there you go. You turn it into a positive, an injury into a positive. So that's amazing. Hey, so no, good man. And I mean, it's also amazing to see what you're doing now. I know you said you're not competing full time anymore by any means, but what you're doing now is a content creator and you're getting tons of footage at all these ITU and Super League races. And you're able to go there and travel and support Katie as well, who's actively racing in these competitions as well. So I think that's kind of like a perfect fit right now. Do you guys try to take mini vacations and explore and travel at all these races, or is it mostly pretty much a straight business trip involving racing and content creation?
Everything's straight business. Yeah. Unfortunately. But with Super League, and then also actually with my new job as a content creator for ITU, part of my job is going and exploring and getting video footage or doing interviews in like really cool places, or like not even cool places, but like touristy destinations that you would normally go. Obviously those are cool too, but not like you don't plan a trip to go to these like super far off destinations.
Yeah.
But you still get to see all the main cool things from each of the cities that you're going to. So with Super League, you have like these videos that you're doing to promote where you're going. So the whole purpose of it is you get to go and do what tourists do, so you can showcase that to the world. Like, this is what this place has to offer. So we kind of have been doing that as well with ITU with a few different things. So this last year, I've actually got to do a lot more than what we've done in the past. But I would say for the most part, you just show up, you're there to do your job, which is race and race well. So we don't usually do too much exploring unless it's towards the end of the season, or we know that like after this race, we have like a mini break, which we typically don't have. So if our this year in Bermuda, Katie's parents and my parents both got to come. So then we stayed one extra day afterwards, but that extra day was spent doing content for ITU. So it was kind of work, but then also it was really fun to spend time with our families in Bermuda going around the island. So
yeah, no, see, that's amazing, right? And one thing I always say consistently is that the ITU athletes do so much traveling. So it's always mind boggling to me, because like, I mean, how do you find traveling for the sport? Like, I'm sure you guys have it obviously down to rocket science when it comes to packing, traveling with all your gear, and like navigating new airports and things like that, right? Like, that's probably pretty confusing in some countries.
Yeah, I don't even know where to start with that, but like, we've gotten very, very good at that. In terms of like packing, Katie and I have a very specific way that we do things. And also it depends on like which bike we're riding, because some bikes are all internal routing, like in the headset, and so that you can't take the bars off, which is how I travel with my bike.
Yeah.
So I have to ride a specific bike, but then anyway, so there's like lots of things that we've had to change over the years to make sure that all the traveling goes well in terms of like getting a rental car. So like, if we have too much stuff, then we can't get a smaller rental car, and if you have to get a bigger rental car, then it's more expensive. And then also like, if you have to lug everything around, that's super annoying. And then certain airlines, you only get a certain amount of like 30 kilos of baggage. And if you have 40 kilos, then they're going to get charged like an insane amount. So then you're like throwing away stuff at the airport. You have to learn all those things. And over the last couple of years, we've dialed it in. And this last year was definitely our best year in terms of travel and packing and navigating through airports and airlines and all that stuff. So
awesome.
Also with Katie, she likes getting to the airport like 3 hours early. So I'm never worried about like being late or missing a flight or not knowing where we're going, because we always have plenty of time.
That's perfect. And so that's funny. So it's, you know, I'm going to have to talk to you after this podcast, because there's like, I'm flying to Germany next summer for Challenge Roth. And I think that's a big deal, but you guys, that's like a walk in the park for what you guys do in terms of traveling. But I mean, like, just thinking about it, like having to travel with a bike case and gear. And so you talked perfectly about, you know, what size of vehicle you're going to ride when you get down there, right? And if you have young kids with you, in my case, so there's all those things you got to think about, and just bring your gear everywhere after you travel. So I know that's with like a lot of age group triathletes just going around to races overseas, that they tend to have those struggles, right? So it's pretty overwhelming, but it's crazy to see how well you guys have it down pat. So pretty impressive.
Yeah, my biggest tip is that you don't need as much stuff as you think you need. Like, basically you just need one of everything to cover you. So like, if you're going to somewhere where you're not sure if it's going to be super cold or super hot, you don't need to bring like an entire week's worth of warm gear, an entire week's worth of cold gear. Like, you just need one thing to make sure you're okay. And so like this last year, in terms of like weight and getting your bags correct, I bring what's called a scrub a wash bag to do laundry. And then if you have like just your normal training stuff, that's what you're wearing pretty much the whole time if you're going to an event. So you don't need like all these nice clothes and like a different outfit for every day, which a lot of people think that they do. And so if you just have your training stuff and your race stuff, and then like one normal clothes, and then you keep up with laundry, like doing your laundry in the bathtub, or if you have access to a washer dryer, then you're good to go with that one outfit, basically.
There you go. Awesome tips. I love it. So that's perfect, man. And so switching up here, I want to dive into a little more triathlon specific questions now. And one that I wanted to talk about, of course, I'm sure you've had lots of discussion with this with a lot of people, is the 70.3 World Championships recently, right? To many, it was a big surprise to see Gustav take the win. But of course, knowing all these ITU athletes yourself and knowing their strengths and weaknesses, you said from the get-go that Gustav suited this course really well, right? So, I mean, what makes you think as him being an athlete would do so well there, I guess, before the race?
Well, A, he's done the second fastest 70.3 time ever in the history. He was only 13 seconds behind Christian Blumenfeld in either Dubai or Abu Dhabi. I forget which one it was, or Bahrain or something, one of those last December. And so knowing that he was right there, like 13 seconds in a 70.3 is not that much. And so he's basically the fastest 70.3 ever in the history. And he's a much better bike handler than Christian Blumenfeld is. And that course in 70.3 Worlds had a very, very technical descent. And I know how good at descending Gustav is. So I just figured that if he was able to be near the front, he would have an advantage in terms of not just saving energy, but being faster on that course, regardless of the bike that you're riding. But on that one specifically, I don't think if it had been like a dead flat course on a road bike, I don't think he would have won. But knowing that that course was the way it was, I think suited, it was an advantage for him. And then also, yeah, he's just in good form. And yeah, he just... I like him too.
Yeah, there you go. And that adds bonus. Yeah. That's awesome, man. Perfect. Yeah, no, man. Like it seems like a ton of ITU athletes are crushing that 70.3 distance now. Like a perfect example, you just mentioned Christian Blumenfeld too, right? So as ITU athletes, are they training for these 70.3 races, or does that just sharp fitness just carry over from ITU and Super League?
Yeah, the fitness just carries over. Doing training for Olympic distance in 70.3 is not drastically different. Typically, you would just be riding a little bit more, maybe running a little bit more, and then swimming less. So for these guys who are training at that level, you're doing definitely enough training for 70.3. Your higher end speed is probably a little bit more sharp than what it would need to be for 70.3. But when you're one of the best athletes in the world, I think you can handle the switch quite well. If they were switching to like Ironman, that would be a totally different story. That's a different beast. But Olympic distance and 70.3 at the elite level, I think is a pretty easy transition.
Mm-hmm. No, perfect. That's good to know. Yeah, I was always curious, right? And originally I thought the Olympic athletes would have inherently, you know, quite different training volume, but it almost seems like every athlete I've spoken to from the ITU almost seems to train more when you consider it in hours than a lot of the 70.3 athletes I've talked to. So it's very fascinating to kind of see that, and just they can go into these courses on their busy schedules as is and just pick off a 70.3 and do so well at it. I mean, for example, the World Championships do so well at that. So it was pretty impressive to see that. So awesome. Now, you're part of the JFT crew, as we just spoke about earlier. And of course, that's my coach, Joel Filio. And I mean, that start off, I guess, that guy's just a complete wealth of knowledge when it comes to coaching. So now, what are the key principles that he implements in his training that I guess age groupers could take away as pieces of training advice? Like, are there any training philosophies that he instills in you guys as his athletes that could help age groupers out?
The biggest thing, and you see this most in age groupers, is that everything is too complicated. And Joel's biggest thing is keep things simple, master the basics. So that would probably be the biggest Joel Filio quote that comes to mind, is master the basics. So we do a lot of repetitive stuff. Like it's just the same thing over and over again. And basically it becomes monotonous, but that's what makes you better. And you've seen that in his squad. Like he had 7 different people win WTS races this year. It's not something that is just like he thinks works well. It's been proven that it works well by having the best squad in the world right now. And a lot of times people will get bored or like doing the same thing over and over. They're like, oh, I like can't even mentally handle that. And in an endurance sport, the mental aspect is just as important as the physical aspect. And so if you can dial in mastering the basics, if you can do the same thing over and over again and see the benefit in that, rather than having to be like, oh, I need to be entertained. I have like training ADD where this same workout is boring. I need to like mix it up a little bit. Then that's almost a weakness that you're not mentally able to work through doing the same thing over and over again. It is really challenging. It's something that's really hard to do, but when you commit to it, and then in the long run, you'll see the benefits of it and you'll realize like, man, what was I doing before? Like changing this up, doing this different thing and blah, blah, blah. But all I really needed to be doing was focusing on what is most important. So that's another thing is like a lot of people focus on like getting that extra 1% or the final 1% or like the last 5%, but they're focusing on like the marginal gains or whatever word you want to use for it, which is not important at all if you don't have the first 99% of right. all the base. So that's probably Joel's biggest philosophy. That makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's perfect. I think that's really good for a lot of listeners to hear. And I know a big common error that people think that they need to hit their max potentials in training all the time. Like they can't improve without hitting those top end efforts at times. So, I mean, I'm just kind of curious to see, like with you guys in the JFT crew, are you guys, like you just mentioned a lot of repetition, are you guys hitting your top ends and like kind of pushing yourselves to the limit quite frequently, or is that pretty infrequent?
Never. So that is also a huge thing that separates our training group, is that you will never see anybody doing something racing or going max out or all out effort unless it's a race. There's no PRs in training. They're not comparing their best times. They're not saying, oh, this is the most fit I've ever been because of this workout, or these are the highest numbers that I've ever hit. It's not about that. It's about the consistency. Because I'll say this a lot, but it's an endurance sport. It's not a 1-minute race. Like your high-end, your anaerobic efforts, they matter to a point. Because when you're tired and it's the end of a race, if you're training and you're going max out, you're never ever going to be able to hit that speed or that anaerobic level in a race. What you're going to be doing, what's more important, is that endurance and strength. Because if you have that endurance base and that strength base, at the end of the race, when you're sprinting, you're probably sprinting at 80% of when you're fresh in training. So what we do is when we're training hard, you know, we're going 80, 90%, but never 100%. Because if you're going 100%, you're just training at a level that you're never going to reach during a race. Hmm. And then that's just opening up potential for injury. And then it just takes one workout for everything to crumble. And that's the last thing you want. So, the consistency factor, also when you're not taking any days off, you're just working out, working out, working out. And like your easy days are the recovery. So you have a 5K swim and a 30-minute run or whatever, and that's your quote day off. Like, and that's what's helping you stay consistent, stay uninjured. You know that, oh, it's track Tuesday. We're doing this session on the track. I'm not going to hit 100%. I'm not going to go max, because then I know I'm still going to be working out on Wednesday. I'm still going to be working out on Thursday. We have hard workouts on Friday. We have hard workouts on Saturday. You know, like there's never going to be a time where you can reverse what you've done, the damage that you've done, if you go too hard. So yeah, in the training, like you will never see any of the top athletes going 100% or even like 95%, probably max out at 90. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. And that's really cool to hear. So I'm glad you kind of touched base on all that, because it sounds like the consistency day to day trumps having those massive high end or those big workout days, right? And then needing those days off to recover or potentially get injured. So that's awesome to clarify. So good, man. And I mean, let's switch up a little bit and focus a bit into the Super League racing. Now, we just wrapped up a few great races there between Malta and Jersey. So how are these races from your perspective? Because you were getting a lot of content down there, right?
Yeah. So I'm always excited about talking about Super League because I've experienced it from just watching. As a spectator, I've experienced it from actually racing the races, and then I've experienced it from shooting it as a photographer. So I've had pretty much every angle that you could possibly do with Super League. And so having all the different experiences were very different. But each one was, for me, a win. Like, you can't go wrong with Super League. It's an incredible super exciting, fun race to just stand there and watch. And like, there's action all the time. Like, you don't miss anything because all the courses are so small and narrow. And like, you're just standing there and everyone's going around you 800 meter loops, basically. Like,
yeah.
You don't see someone for what, 10 seconds, and you're like, okay, so that's the longest you're not going to see someone. It's a pretty exciting race to be able to follow. And then like racing, you get treated super well. It's really fun to hang out with all the other athletes. Like, usually all the meals are together, so everyone's just hanging out and talking, and you don't really feel the pressure of like having rivalries or racing or like staring people down or trying to give them like a mental edge on them by like showing them like what you're eating. It doesn't even matter. Like, you're just hanging out and like talking as normal friends. And then on race day, yeah, you race each other and it's fun. And then working as a content producer, it's pretty cool because you have so many opportunities with 2 days of racing and two different semifinals and so many laps on the bike with like multiple rounds of racing. You have so many opportunities to get content. To get different photos, or if you had this idea and you're like, oh, I want to get this shot. And if you miss it, like if it only happens once in like an ITU race, and you'll never get that chance again until like the next year.
Right. Yeah.
You just have multiple chances. Because like a lot of people don't understand that in a sprint distance race in ITU, if you shoot the swim exit and then they leave on the bike, you only get like, there's four laps on the bike. So you only get four opportunities really to take pictures of people. And so when you think of it like that, like, oh, there's only four chances to take pictures and you have to get all these like good bike pictures or whatever. And you want to try to get to different places on the course, and they're 5K laps. So you're like, okay, I have to like pick my places and moments and all this stuff. It's super stressful. Whereas Super League, you're like, okay, I can do an entire loop of the bike course, like make my way to every single spot that I've staked out, even in one round, and then they're doing another round. So you have a chance to do that. And they have a whole nother day to do it as well. So if I missed it the first day, then go back again the next day. It just opens up doors for like huge opportunities for getting like really good content. But at the same time, also it's completely different shooting style. Because I shoot for ITU, it's more about getting like picturesque images of showing off the location. Getting really cool artistic shots, more like one-offs where you can get a shot. Like, my whole goal is to get shots that I don't think anybody else could get or anybody else could think of.
Right.
And whereas Super League, the whole purpose is to get like gritty faces, get all the branding in the shots for the sponsors, get as many crowds in the pictures as possible, and showcase the race course. So focusing on all those different things, you have to have a different mindset to approach it. And so shooting Super League for the first time this year, it really opened up another door that I didn't know existed in my mind for viewing content and being able to execute on something that I've been basically hired to do, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it was really cool working with the other two photographers as well. I haven't worked with that many people, like that sort of team. And also we kind of had a Super League style that we wanted to go for, so that like when all three photographers' images are posted, you can't really tell whose is whose. We just want one kind of image that is Super League. So I had to practice and change settings in my camera and change my editing style. And like for 2 weeks I practiced to try to get them like the one guy, Darren Wheeler is his name. That cameraman, he has been shooting Super League for the last 2 years. So he's had a style of shooting, a style of editing that I just had to try and copy basically. So I practiced for a long time and then, was told afterwards that I did very well on executing that. So I was pretty happy with that.
No, that's amazing, man. So it's funny because a lot of listeners right now who probably don't do any content creation, they're probably listening and thinking like, wow, there's a lot more goes into it than you would actually think, right? To the untrained eye, all people see is just the finished product. They don't see all the work that goes into it. And I can imagine just hearing that is, especially at those ITU races, is your heart rate's probably up there with the athletes by the time you're running around catching shots and making sure you don't miss people. So
that's, yeah, that's I run cool. Usually around 15 to 17K a day for an ITU event. because I'll work my way around the entire bike course multiple times. And if the entire bike course is 5K, so just two races, that's 10K right there. Just in, on the bike portion, not even on the run or the swim or between events or whatever it is. So yeah, I have to stay in pretty good shape just to work an event.
There you go. Awesome. That's funny, man. And now, so, I mean, talking about the different race formats in the Super League, like between the Enduro or the Triple Mix and all those, like, which one would probably be your most favorite, or I guess even strongest, seeing as you race them in, I guess, which one would be your least favorite, kind of wrap up that big long question?
Yeah, my least favorite is the Triple Mix for sure. Just because when you're tired, and Super League accentuates that quite often, quite easily, it's really, really hard to think what's next when it's not in the same order of swim, bike, run, when you have to do run, bike, swim, or bike, swim, run, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Like, you're like, oh, transition, what do I need to do? Oh, I need to put my cap and goggles in my suit. And I'm like, no, this time I need to put it in the box. And like, okay, I'm getting on the bike. Oh, shoot, I still have my running shoes on. Like, I need to take my running shoes off. Like, yeah, it's just really hard. The other ones where, like, you do back-to-back, but you have 10-minute breaks, and so you're able to, like, set up your transition in between, I think that's pretty cool. But at the same time, I would rather be doing it like back to back without stopping, because stopping sometimes you feel worse when you have to restart again, but then other people feel much better. So, I don't know. It's tough because, like, it depends on the race scenario as well. Because if you're in a good position, like if I have had a good swim and I'm leading out of the water and I'm able to kind of like cruise the beginning, that completely changes the entire race, as opposed to if you start the first leg with a high heart rate, and then you're like, it's never coming down.
Yeah.
And the higher your heart rate, the harder it is to think. And like, you can't really explain it. People have to experience it, where you literally can't think of anything. Like, you don't know what's going on, and like, your brain is so far behind what is actually happening in life that you're just so confused. And yeah, that's why it's really interesting to watch everyone execute and perform so well on these back-to-back like different events, and going from one thing to the next being so tired, because unless you've done it, you don't really understand how hard it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, that it seems to be the general consensus that all these, you know, top the fittest athletes out there, and they're saying how hard it is. Like, I can imagine it's got to be pretty intense racing. So I think a lot of people, yeah, underestimate it until they get out there. So I mean, that's pretty cool. And I mean, talking about the training for the Super League in particular, I know the general consensus has been that there isn't a whole lot of specific training tailored to the Super League yet, but that might be something that changes down the road as these athletes kind of get into more competitive racing at the Super League, right? Like, do you see that being a possibility in the future, where there's going to be a little bit more specific training when it comes to all these transitions and all these different course layouts that might give that person that competitive edge above the next person in that style racing?
Yeah, for sure. Once Super League becomes like, has a larger series with more races, and becomes, it's hard to say, but quote, more important than the Olympics. Because right now, like, obviously the Olympics is the priority of all these athletes.
Yeah.
So they're focusing on the ITU and the qualification for Tokyo, and then the Super League's like secondary. But if Super League, let's just say, was in the Olympics, for sure people would be catering their training way more to doing all the transitions and practicing doing back-to-back stuff with maxed out heart rates, because that is probably the most important part. Like, you've seen Super League races lost just in the transition zone. By just putting your shoes on. So for sure, in the future, that will definitely be part of it. But also, like, a lot of the athletes, or at least Katie and like the ones in JFT crew, use the Super League races as their training for the ITU races. So you get to do so many transitions and have to think so hard about the next discipline, and your heart rate's so high. When you do it at Super League, it becomes so easy at an ITU race. So Super League is almost the training for that, those things, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Awesome. That's actually really cool to look at it that perspective. Awesome. That's neat. And then now, I'm sure over the years, there have been some people who have guided you with some amazing advice in triathlon. Is there any advice or wisdom that you'd be able to pass on to the newer listeners of this podcast when it comes to racing and training in triathlon?
Yeah. like we touched on earlier with Joel Filial's training philosophy, but a lot of times when people are preparing for things, they think they're always thinking harder, or it's a race, so I need to practice being destroyed or practice having my heart rate super high. But really the focus should be on recovery and doing the recovery stuff as easy as possible and easier than what you would think. Because a lot of times people think that, like, oh, if I'm going such and such easy, then it's not doing anything. Whereas the mentality, you need to view it differently as, okay, I have to be going easy. I have to hold myself back. I have to be recovering so that when I do get to the hard workouts, I'm ready for them. Because if you go into your hard workouts tired, then that percentage of how much you're getting out of it is lowered. So if you're doing easier stuff easy, then you're fully recovered, and then your hard workouts or your better workouts, you're getting the max percentage and the max benefit out of them. So probably my biggest tip would be do your easy stuff easier, because doing training with age groupers, which like we don't normally do, but if we have friends who are not elites, that's the biggest thing, is like we'll go on an easy ride or easy run and they're running so fast or like riding so hard, and like, you don't need to do that. This is just an easy ride. Like even though we're professionals, we don't ride at race pace like all the time. Like you save that for specific workouts. Even if it's like a 10-minute workout, like 2 days from now, you still ride easy because you know that that 10 minutes is super important.
Mm-hmm. No, that's perfect. And so what's your take then on flexibility training as a triathlete and things like stretching or yoga and all that kind of stuff? Like, does that help, or do you recognize a lot of athletes incorporating this into their training, or is that something that's kind of overlooked in training?
That's very athlete specific. Yeah. You could talk to an athlete who swears by stretching, who does self-massage, who's doing all the rollers, who's doing everything an hour a day, and that's what's keeping them uninjured. That's making them their best. And then you'll talk to me, who I will never stretch at all. If I stretch, I end up getting injured. I hate massages. I always feel terrible after them. So I don't like going to get massaged. I'll do self-massage every once in a while if I feel like I need it. But a lot of times if there's something that I feel like I needs to be massaged or like rolled out, a lot of times it's just irritating it and it makes it worse. So, for me, I personally do not stretch ever. I don't really do an injury prevention program, so to speak, or a recovery program, I guess, besides just like sleeping and eating properly. Right. but that's just me. And you could talk to 10 different athletes to get 10 different answers. And it's very specific on what you found works for your body specifically.
That's right. No, that's a good way of looking at it too. Cause yeah, I mean, if there's an athlete out there who's never getting injury or never getting, yeah, injuries essentially, and never having any problems with their muscles or tension, things like that, then I can almost see it as that philosophy is you don't want to fix something that's not broken essentially. Right. So now when it comes to the swim, what are some tips you can recommend that would help just triathletes in general feel more confident in the water? Like are there certain drills that you could recommend where they should focus on, or should they just look at picking up a lot of the volume and time in the water?
Yeah, the volume and time in the water is my philosophy. Obviously, like I'm not the king. Like my word is not rule, but I think the biggest mistake age groupers make is focusing on drills and spending too much time in the water using toys or doing sculling or like learning how to kick or doing this high elbow or whatever. Like, all these different drills that they're focusing on, they should be using that time to just swim. Because these drills, especially later in life, like if you're an adult and you're like, there's very different levels of people. It's impossible to have like a blanket statement. But let's just say if you're an average adult triathlete who swims regularly, don't spend time doing all these drills. You don't need them. You just need to swim more. If you're able to swim 400, 500 meters more a day instead of doing 25s of sculling or whatever you're doing, you're going to be a better swimmer than if you're focusing on these small drills. Most people's like technique, obviously, it's really hard to talk about this because like there are certain people who would have terrible, absolutely terrible, terrible technique. And yes, you would need to change a couple things. But for the most part, everyone knows how to swim. You swim a specific way that is good for your body. It's the same thing with running. Like, everyone has different running styles. A lot of people run naturally. I don't believe in changing the way somebody runs, because that could lead to injury, because you're running in a way that is specific to your body. So in the same thing as swimming, I believe people are swimming in the same way that's specific to their body, and they should just continue to do that, but just do more of that if they're not seeing improvements. Yeah, like our group, obviously we're elites, and I've been swimming my entire life, so I don't necessarily have to focus on those drills, but we never spend any time messing around with doing drills or kicks or like using funky equipment to practice this, that, the other thing. We just swim and use the time as efficiently as possible to get as many meters in as we can. And that's proven to really better people's swims who have had trouble in the past or have struggled. Like I said, that's not for everyone, but my biggest recommendation would be to just have a coach, like, listen to your coach, do whatever your coach says, because, like, I'm not your coach, so.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, and that's the key takeaway, I guess, right? Like, at the end of the day, everyone's going to have a different perspective on how they should do it. I definitely like what you're saying on that, so I can almost attest and agree to that, right? Like, I'd rather myself in particular get a little more time getting in that swim, but I definitely see what you're saying there. So that's really cool. But ultimately, yeah, it comes down to an individual as an athlete. And I guess, yeah, if they have a coach, then I guess definitely take the recommendations of the coach, because I think those coaches will have a long-term plan for that athlete. So that's good, man. I appreciate that.
One more thing that I'll add to that is that in triathlon, swimming is more an endurance sport. I've said that so many times, but people forget that. You don't want to train as an individual sport. Yes, if you're doing a swim event where you're doing a 100-meter freestyle and like hundredths of a second matter, tenths of a second matter, if you're in open water, all these little technique drills that you've worked on are just out the door. It doesn't matter because you're not in a pool. It's not perfectly smooth water, especially in triathlon when you're around like hundreds of other people as well. Like these arm extensions and distance per stroke and this high elbow catch, like, it's not going to help you when all the water is moving around. Like, what's going to help you is having that endurance, having being able to swim at a level where your heart rate doesn't go too high. You just need to move your arms and legs in a consistent manner that gets you through the water efficiently. And if you can practice that, then that's going to be a bigger benefit than working on these tiny little drills.
Yeah, beautiful, man. That's perfect. That's some really solid advice. I like that. And I mean, before we wrap it up, I mean, of course, I just want to talk about Tokyo 2020, which of course just around the corner. And I'm curious to hear your take on this, because you know so much about all these athletes that are going to be competing in it. And I'm curious to see, are you able to give us a few names that you can see the people should be looking out for as potentials for possible podiums or to do really well or surprise people, both the female side and male side, I guess, for Tokyo 2020?
Ooh, so many names that I don't want to miss anybody, but
yeah, yeah, fair enough. But, I don't want to put you on the spot, I guess. Yeah, don't pick your top three or something, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I'll throw some names out there for sure. But what was interesting this last year is how many different men won events. So we had like Mario win Abu Dhabi, Dorian Conix win in Bermuda, Vince won in Yokohama, Jake won in Leeds. Jake was actually the only male to win two WTS events this year. And he won Olympic distance and he won a sprint distance. Yella, he won in Montreal. We had Johnny Brownlee win in Edmonton. Christian Blumenfeld won in the grand final. So and then Tyler Misliczuk won in Tokyo. So there are like, what, eight or nine different races, eight or nine different names that you got. So there are so many potential winners in Tokyo that's what makes it super, super exciting, because you can't call it. Like, and then like if Alex Yee qualifies for the Olympics, he's got the fastest like open 10K run split out of anybody. So if he has a good swim and he's able to sit in on the bike or whatever, like, he could win. He was second in Abu Dhabi. So Gomez, he's coming back. You can never count him out. He's won like 10 or 12 world championships, whatever it is. So yeah, he's amazing. Matt McElroy, he's been running incredibly well. He just won in Tongyang and in Miyazaki, and just blew doors on people. Like, he it ran away from everyone like it was nothing. And he was second in leads this year. So if he's around, he'll be in the mix. So there's like 10 guys that have the potential to win, not just be on the podium, but like actually win. Fernando Alarza, he runs some of the fastest run times as well, like behind Mario and Vince, like all these guys. So yeah. Anyway, that's probably more names than he needed, but I was just thinking about, and like off the top of my head, those are the guys that will definitely be factors. And then Gustav, I didn't even name Gustav, but yeah, he was third in Bermuda and then won 70.3 Worlds, and he had a solid race, maybe fourth or something like that, the grand final. And yeah, he's on fire, so can't count him out.
Yeah,
on the women's side.
Oh. Yeah, sorry, go on.
Yeah, the women's side is probably a little bit less, like fewer names, but like Rachel Klammer, of course. Katie Zafiris is the first.
There you go. Yep.
It's always weird for me to say that because like everyone's like, oh, you're being biased, but it's like, okay, she won 6 events this year.
Yeah.
She won the grand final and won the world championship, so she's probably the number one athlete to look out for. And even so, the times that she was doing as well, it's really hard to compare times from year to year because the conditions are different, the fields mm-hmm. are different. But she was doing times that were quite a bit better than what Flora was doing when Flora was winning. So if Flora was even at her best, it would have been awesome to see her go against Katie this last year. So if Flora is back to her best next year and then Katie still has room for improvement, that's going to be a sweet battle. I really want to see that. I want Flora to be uninjured, super healthy, like trained up to the gills and like just ready to battle, because that's going to be awesome. Mm-hmm. Of course, Jessica Learmonth, she was even pushing and beat Georgia in the grand final. And she was like running with Katie until the last like 300 meters of that run. So Jess is definitely going to be a factor. Summer Cook, if she's in the front, she's got insane wheels. She does really well in the heat. Cassandra Bagrand, she hasn't quite proven herself consistently in the like longer distance, like sprint distance or Olympic distance races, but she obviously has one of the fastest runs since Gwen. So if she's around, like she's definitely going to be a factor. Rachel Klammer, she always puts together really good performances when it matters. Vicky Holland, she's a returning medalist. She didn't have quite a good year the best year as before. She was previously world champion in 2018. But she had a really good result in Tokyo at the test event. So she'll definitely be one to watch. Can't count her out for a one-day event where it matters. Ashley Gentle, she's won the grand final in Gold Coast. Her year wasn't so great, but she just won her 7th NUSA title this last weekend. So that was huge. Nobody's ever done that before. But yeah, Taylor Spivey, she's working on her run. She's always there. Super League, she's raced well. So yeah, those are probably the women.
Yeah.
Probably too many, but
yeah, no, see, that's good. I'm glad you talked on so many too, right? Because for a lot of the listeners who are excited about Super League, excited about the Olympics and things like that, but aren't always able to watch every race and kind of see who's who at each event, right? I think you just really explained that. You kind of gave a Cole's notes on it all. I think that got everyone up to pace on who we should be looking out for. So that's awesome, man. That's good stuff. So to kind of end this off, I want to do that 1 minute Q&A fire round. If you're up for it, we'll see how many questions we get through in 1 minute. You in for that?
Yeah, sure.
All right, let's do it. So I'll start the timer here and we'll get at it. All right, so we're starting off with, who's the funniest triathlete, ITU triathlete?
Ooh, Gustav.
Gustav? Ah, the man.
Yeah. Awesome. He's super funny. I wish I spoke Norwegian.
What is a young triathlete that's up and coming that could be a big name to watch out for in the coming years?
Alex Yee.
Now, what's one race you've always wanted to do but you haven't done?
Oh.
Pass.
Pass. I don't know. Done them all, though.
Yeah, there you go. We'll switch it on. So what's the most beautiful place you traveled? That might be a hard one too.
Bahamas, Bermuda.
Yeah, perfect. There you go. What's one of the craziest or funniest pre-race rituals you've seen athletes do? Or have you seen them? Is that a common thing to see?
No. Not comment.
It's all done behind closed doors. There you go. And then lastly, I'd say, who's your biggest inspiration or influence in triathlon?
Mario Mola, definitely. Mario is like the nicest person you'll ever meet. He's got time for everyone and like super smart, super down to earth. Yeah, he is amazing.
Awesome, man. Perfect. Well, I mean, that's a wrap, buddy. I mean, obviously we keep going all day, but I'm sure you got a pretty busy day ahead. So I won't keep you here any longer. But as we wrap things up here, I just wanted to ask for the listeners as to where they can find more about you and the content you're producing.
The biggest platform I guess I use is Instagram. And so Instagram, my handle is @tzafiris. And that's where I post like all my ITU images. I post a lot of images of Katie training and the JFT crew. And basically my captions are just explaining what I'm up to, but then the pictures are pictures that I've taken of other people. So if you go to my Instagram, you're like, why are there no pictures of him? I don't usually post pictures of myself. So, and then I post like tons of jokes on Instagram stories. And if you like stupid jokes, then you can follow me on Twitter. It's the same thing, @tzafiris. And then I just post ridiculous jokes on Twitter.
Perfect, man. Awesome. And then do you have a website or anything for your own content or?
Yeah, I have a website, but I don't update it at all. My friend's mom, Emma Jackson, who's another triathlete, her mom helps me with my website, and I haven't sent her my photos from this year. So hopefully it'll be updated soon, but it's tommyzphotos.com. And that will just showcase like the last few years of all my favorite images. Perfect. From training and racing.
Yeah. Awesome, man. There you go. And you know what, man, that's a wrap. So thanks again for coming on the show, and appreciate that. And we'll definitely be sure to keep in touch, man.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Take care.
Thanks.
Well, there you have it. Tommy Zafiris has an amazing story and just one of those people who play such a big role in the sport of triathlon. And I really hope you guys enjoyed listening to his tips and his advice. And guys, if you want to hear more podcasts like these, then hit that subscribe button. And you can follow me on Instagram @pacing.and.racing. And you can also check us out on YouTube by searching Pacing and Racing. And lastly, if you did like this episode, just please take 2 minutes to leave a kind review on the podcast channel, as this helps us get heard by more listeners through the podcast platform algorithms. Anyways, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you next time.